91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today we visit with a panel to discuss educational and employment opportunities for individuals with autism spectrum disorder. There are encouraging programs designed for both adolescents and adults. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Less than 20% of people with disabilities in the U.S. were in the labor force. 35% of young adults with autism have never had a job or received education after high school. Meanwhile, autism is our fastest growing developmental disability. It occurs in 1 in 68 births. Of course, we'll take your calls on the subject when we return after NPR and regional news. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, it's today's Topical Currents Tuesday edition. Today's focus is on autism spectrum disorder, and especially the effort to educate and prepare individuals for employment.
And we have two guests on hand to discuss efforts in the South Florida region, but also with us is special education expert, advocate, author, and columnist Joanne Lara, who's particularly concerned that a majority of the kids with autism graduate high school with few employment skills.
Joanne Lara is the executive director of Autism Works Now and the founder of Autism Movement Therapy. And she's with us now from Van Nuys, California. Welcome to you, Joanne Lara. Thanks. Ms. Lara, are you on the phone with us?
I am.
Okay, there we go. Hi. Okay.
Hey.
So we thought we'd chat with you a little bit before hearing from our other guests. You cite that according to the Center for Disease Prevention and Control, 1 in 68 children in the U.S. are diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. 50,000 youth with autism spectrum disorder graduate public schools each year, and 80% of them remain unemployed 7 years later. So I want to ask you, I mean, it's a pretty staggering statistic. Is this because they're not qualified or able to enter the workforce, or is it because employers are generally not willing to hire them?
Well, you know, it's a good question. I think it's both. I think that we're graduating these individuals at either 18 or 22 without a skill set for the workforce, and we also have a fear factor on the employer's part. So we're looking at both, you know, there's work to be done on both sides of the aisle, let's put it that way.
Is the most common misperception about persons with autism that they're unemployable?
Yes, I would think so. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably the general public's idea of autism as a disability, absolutely.
At what age do ASD kids really need special education? Is it, as in many endeavors, the earlier the better?
Absolutely. Early intervention is the key, but these children are getting a diagnosis early on. That's nationally across the country at 8 months of age, 8 and 12 months. So by the time they reach a public school system at a preschool or in a kindergarten level, they're already designated special education.
You know, we had on a guest, let me see if I can find, just last week, her name was Dr. Gail Saltz. She's a psychiatrist with New York Presbyterian Weill Cornell School of Medicine. Mm-hmm. She wrote a book called The Power of Different, The Link Between Disorder and Genius, and had some amazing stories about autistic, though some individuals with autism that have done these amazing things. So when we talk about them acquiring the skills they need to be in the workforce, doesn't it depend on the individual and where they fall on the autism spectrum?
Absolutely. I think you have to look at it. We have to look at it as a bell curve.
Okay.
So the individuals she's speaking about, the genius, the savants, yes, many, many of our individuals would fall into that what we call Asperger's category. Temple Grandin is a perfect example. She's considered to be a genius. She has autism. She's one of the foremost representatives of autism globally. But if you look at autism as a spectrum, and not like a linear spectrum, but more like a bell curve, mm-hmm. Go back to the bell curve idea. So on the left of that bell curve, you're going to have cognitive diminishment. And as you get closer to the top of the bell, that's where the majority of your individuals will fall who have an ASD diagnoses. And then as you get further over to the right, you're going to see the savants and the Aspergers and the individuals that are still have the eligibility of autism. So they still have the three characteristics of what autism are: a speech and language, some kind of a speech and language impairment, a behavioral issue of some kind, and a social issue. So they still fall into the eligibility of autism, but they present themselves in a cognitively higher area. So yes, we have to serve all three of those areas.
Right.
Do most special education programs concentrate more on social skills rather than employment production?
I believe that they do now, yes. And I believe that that's what this movement is about in this country. There's many of us in the expert area of autism that see that, these individuals are getting left behind. If we're going to get them up to speed socially, and then we're going to graduate them, and there's no social, there's no community, and there's no work or job, then what have we really done for them?
You talked about the disability inclusion movement in your piece, Seat at the Table, and how that actually backfired in terms of providing those with autism the skill sets they need to secure and keep a job. Would you explain that, and is that still operative?
Can you restate the question for me again?
Yes. You talked about the disability inclusion movement in a piece you wrote.
The op-ed, yes.
Yes, and yes. how that actually backfired. Is that still at work? Is that still a movement?
Well, the work as a reality for individuals with autism is a movement. What I spoke about, coming from a very personal point of view, is that I was in the L.A. Unified School District for 10 years. I taught in special day class students with autism moderate to severe disability. That was the beginning of the inclusion movement, as we called it.
Right.
So the pendulum was swinging towards inclusion, meaning that our kids were educated as best as possible as they could be with their general typical ed peers. And that's part of IDEA. That's the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which is the act that is the umbrella for how do we educate individuals with disabilities in this country. So what we saw was, this is working out well. It's working out well for the higher functioning individuals with autism. They're getting to be, for 25% of the day or 50% of the day, included in a general ed setting and accessing the curriculum. And there lies the issue, accessing the curriculum. Many of our individuals with moderate to severe labels, individuals who are falling into that kind of left side of that bell curve that we were talking about, they were still being included for the same percentage of time, but they weren't able to access the curriculum. Mm-hmm. So what we found was they were at the back of the classroom with an aide. An aide who was keeping them sitting in their chair, keeping them on task, but accessing the curriculum wasn't happening. But we were still fully including them because full inclusion was the best practices. So what I'm saying in that op-ed piece is, let's go back and look at that. We did a great service to individuals with disabilities in the social area, but we were also keeping them from what we could have been providing them with, which would have been a vocational center training issue, and meaning giving them a skill set that it would equate to a paycheck when they exited the public school system.
Right.
What areas of special education or special workplace skills are most applicable to the ASD students?
Now, that's a good question, because our kids love computers. So they're really good at, like, computer graphics, medical data coding, is a great place for them to be. And I was just speaking with a friend of colleague of mine yesterday.
Which takes them away from social interaction, though.
Well, look, that's not their asset. And right. We can, you know, as hard as we try and direct instruct and role model, I mean, there are many, many programs out there for social interaction that are used in the public school system and in the community. It's not going to be their asset. And so I think we want to look at the individual and say, what's going to work for them in a workforce? An employer is certainly going to want that cognitive that they have to offer, especially if they're graphically and computer-oriented. That's what that was about when they rolled out in 2015. We're hiring individuals with autism. Sure you are. You're looking for the next Temple Grandin who's going to change the way technology is looked at today. And bravo to them. But that's not the majority of our kids. So they, and as an aside, those individuals that they employ, if we went and asked where are they working, probably in a cubicle in a room by themselves.
Right.
They're not out selling cars.
They're not out selling cars, no.
I wanted to ask you, Joanne, you know, I wanted to bring this up. When I mentioned about the 50,000 youth with ASD graduate public schools each year, 80% of them remain unemployed. If you would discuss the, not only is that detrimental to those afflicted, but it has a vast economic impact on our society. Would you give those numbers?
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking, well, in 2015 were the last numbers that came in for federal benefit monies that went out, which is Social Security, disability, that's paid out to families with individuals with moderate to severe disabilities at the beginning and the onset of their education, academia process. We're looking at $265 billion in 2015. So, you know, my idea and many other people's ideas, look, let's get these guys to work. Let's get these guys. They want to work. They want a place to go. Who doesn't want a place to go every day? They want dignity. So if we can restructure the way we're looking at disability and employment, and that would be nationally, and that would be all disabilities, then we can change that $265 billion because that's a cradle-to-grave number.
Mm. And you just talked about how everybody wants to feel useful. How vital do you think employment is to the well-being of both youth and adults with ASD?
I think we're talking about anyone. Anyone
right.
feels great when they have they're needed, when they have a place to go, when they're included. Let's put it that way. There's the word inclusion again, and I don't want to leave with that doom and gloom on inclusion. I think that served its purpose, and I think we've moved on.
Okay.
You know, there's a film. It's called Autism in Love, I believe. It's a documentary. I think it's Autism in Love. And they follow five individuals on the spectrum and love relationships, you know, because now we're moving into this. As our aging population ages, they are having relationships, falling in love, getting married. And one of the individuals is so unhappy, and it's just, I mean, it's so evident that his life is just, he's depressed. I believe he's even on antidepressants. And he gets a job. And it's unbelievable, the transformation, the metamorphosis is, I mean, it's extraordinary. The face changes, the way he speaks changes, his whole demeanor changes because he's got a place to go. He's got a seat at the table.
Mm.
And that's for everyone. That's all of us.
Right. We're speaking about education and job training for individuals with autism spectrum disorder. We're speaking right now with Joanne Lara. She's a special education expert, and she is the founder of Autism Movement Therapy. She's the executive director of Autism Works Now, which we'll talk more about when we come back, when we introduce our other two guests. Stay with us.
And we're back on today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Our focus on education and job training for autism spectrum disorder individuals continues now. Joanne Lara is still with us, so feel free to participate, Joanne. And we'll turn to our studio guests.
First, it's Deborah Chin, the manager of the Daniel Jordan Fiddle Foundation Transition and Adult Programs at the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities. She's worked with teens and adults with autism for over 10 years and with the disadvantaged for over 20 years. We'll find out more about her soon. Welcome.
Also with us is Dr. Jennifer DeRocher. She's the clinical director of the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities and a professor of clinical psychology at the University of Miami. She oversees some 10,000 cases of clients with ASD and sensory impairments. Welcome to you, Dr. Jennifer DeRocher.
Oh, thank you for having us.
It's good to have you. So let's first talk about, you're both affiliated with CARD. We have lots of acronyms today. And just so you know, so we say ASD, it's Autism Spectrum Disorder. CARD is the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities. So would you just first tell us about its University of Miami, Nova Southeastern University, CARD program. Okay,
yes.
We'll start with you, Doctor.
So that's a mouthful, right?
Yes.
We are a state-funded program. There are 7 CARD centers throughout the state, all affiliated with major universities. We are funded through the Department of Education in the state, And we are really a resource outreach and support agency organization for local families who have individuals with autism of any age.
So you're funded by the state.
We are.
So does your funding remain stable?
It has, knock on wood. It has for the last 25 years we've been funded. So we're very thankful for that.
Okay. And could you also expand on your relationship with UM and Nova Southeastern University?
Right. So I'd say about 10 years ago, our CART Center serves Broward County, Miami-Dade, and the Keys. And we noticed that the numbers in Broward were growing, and we really needed to have a home base up in Broward to be able to serve those families better. And we had been housed within a clinic at Nova Southeastern that had given us space. And so we thought we'd make that a partnership more official and really join together and have a collaboration. And it's really unique because private universities don't collaborate like this on a regular basis. So we are officially the UMNSU CARD Center.
Now, when you say the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities, could you explain what some of these other disabilities that are related to autism are?
So those are individuals, it's written into our statute. So those are individuals who have sensory impairments. So individuals who have hearing impairment combined with a vision impairment, so deaf-blind individuals, or individuals who have a hearing or vision impairment with some other developmental condition like cerebral palsy or intellectual disability or something of the like. So it's related in that they both ASD individuals and the related disabilities individuals that we have very significant needs that really need to be attended to in a very multi-systemic way.
Now, okay, let's move on to Deborah Chin. Deborah, you're with the Daniel Jordan Fiddle Foundation, and this is more for adults and transition programs. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, I'm actually part of UMNSU CARD, but we are the Daniel Jordan Fiddle Foundation Transition and Adult Programs at CARD. So within our team, we're serving people that are 14 and up. And so we have staff across Dade and Broward serving our entire catchment area in Dade, Broward, and Monroe counties that are working with youth that are transitioning from high school to adult community life, trying to find their place in the community. And employment is certainly a part of that. And then also all the kinds of issues that happen in adulthood. You know, you spend most of your life as an adult. So every kind of issue that could possibly come up, from mental health issues, sexuality, post-secondary education, employment, all those things are the kinds of issues that we're helping families to address.
And so when so many names here, Joanne was talking about moving on to these relationships.
Yes.
So you deal with that as well. They're love relationships.
It's one of the areas that we help families address whatever concerns. So it could be, we definitely don't have a matchmaking service, so make that clear. No. People have asked us. But when people are looking for romantic relationships, we'll have workshops for adults who are interested in creating those kinds of connections and learning more about the kind of skills that they need to do that. We'll connect them to people in the community. So we'll refer. That's one of the services we do. We refer to professionals in the community, such as therapists, that can provide them with the kind of guidance and intervention that they need to start to create the kind of social relationships they want.
Much of the material I've read on this seems to be that the movement is really concerned with self-advocacy.
Absolutely.
And mostly in the early years. Expand on that.
Well, I think self-advocacy in best practice is something that we start teaching and practicing from a very young age.
To stand up for yourself.
Yes, exactly. To ask for help, to be able to express your emotions, to be able to say, understand it's not just about your rights, but it's also about your responsibilities. Understanding that, especially as someone matures and goes through life, once they become an adult, that there's certain responsibilities in adulthood or responsibilities as a teen, and teaching them how to explicitly begin to take those on and how to be able to practice their self-advocacy skills in all kinds of settings. And it really comes up a lot in employment.
How challenging is it for ASD individuals to have relationships, to get work? Let's stick with the employment for now. To get work, in what ways are they challenged?
I think as Joanne mentioned earlier, just some of she talked about the some of the challenges in terms of the training or education they get, as well as what the opportunities are that are being
right.
made available to them. So I think what we see a lot in our work is adults who might have some skills, but one of their greatest challenges is they don't have the social skills to be able to even breakthrough to get their first job. You know, it's hard for a typical person to get that first job.
Well, to go even on a job interview.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, I mean, that must be so incredibly scary.
Nerve-wracking, yeah, yes. Yeah.
What do you do on the employer side? Do you sort of guide the way a little bit?
We do. So we provide training and consultation to employers, and we've had the ability to be able to do that with a few employers in South Florida that wanted to give opportunities to people with autism, but really wanted to understand how they could better support and accommodate those employees. Mm-hmm. And we obviously really encourage that. The federal government has tax credits for hiring people with disabilities, so we try to make sure they know about that and so that they can really make use of this untapped workforce.
So who are some of the businesses, the employers that are taking part in this?
So I'll say that in the past few years, there's been huge growth and interest in hiring people with autism, as Joanne mentioned. Locally, what we've seen is a lot of self-employment, small businesses, and even some larger organizations that really want to target people with autism and other disabilities. So, for instance, right now at the Miami Children's Museum, they're doing summer internships for adults with autism. Mm. So they're hiring them for the summer. I know that WPPT, we did some staff training there. They're doing internships for individuals with autism. So, but then one of the biggest employers down here of people with autism is Rising Tide Car Wash. They're one of our community partners. Over 85% of their employees, their workforce, are adults with autism. And there's other smaller companies that have started up in order to create opportunities, often for loved ones and family members. So Miami is Kind is a bakery that was started by a mom of a child with autism.
And they employ quite a few people with autism now.
Yeah.
Joanne, Laura, nationally, are you more in favor of expanding these sort of jobs from sort of mom and pop or nonprofit organizations into thriving technical kind of sort of companies?
Absolutely. Good question. What, you know, I'm calling those the one-offs, and I love it. I know that car wash. I mean, that's quite well-known in our community, the Rising Tide Car Wash. But what we really want to do is get the ideology of the country moving forward. You know, we don't view disabilities in this country very well. We are a can-do country, the most beautiful, the brightest, the smartest, the fastest. We're back of the bus Waldo for individuals with disabilities, all disabilities. So it's really a movement not only in educating employers, employees, our own subgroup of individuals who need to be working, who want to be working, but it's the way that we see disability in this country. And that has to change. And in these kinds of conversations right now, I'm in California, you're in Florida, we're talking about the same issues, we have the same passion, we understand our individuals are the same individuals wanting to be part of their community and their society in this country. So more dialogue like this, where employers are listening. And the mom and pop that you mentioned, that's great, because If a small business, and I'd like to add that I believe that I'm correct, Deborah, it's the big businesses that are getting that tax credit. We need to restructure the tax credit so that the small business, that mom and pop, and that middle-sized business gets that same tax credit. They do not now. That's why we see individuals at Walmart. That's why we see them at Home Depot, because they are getting that tax credit, but not the little guy. So that needs to be restructured so that we do have the incentive to hire individuals with disabilities. And so going back to the mom and pop, that's a great place for our individuals to work, because they're typically going to take the time to teach the skill set needed for the job. Our individuals are going to stay there. They're not going to be that revolving door. They're not going to get trained and leave in 2 weeks.
Dr. DeRosa, you wanted to add something?
No, I was actually looking at Deborah to see. I believe that the tax credits are available to some of the smaller businesses. I don't know about mom and pop, but I do know small businesses are also able to access that, I think.
Yes, there's different types of tax credits depending on what's happening in order to support someone with a disability in the workplace. The one that I was thinking of was the work opportunity tax credit, that for someone who's receiving certain sorts of public benefits like Social Security or a kind of VR.
And it's also vocational rehabilitation.
Vocational rehabilitation. And it's also eligible to people who are veterans or who are receiving other kinds of public benefits, that the employer, if that person, the new employee, is a beneficiary of those kinds of benefits, then the employer gets an incentive for hiring those people. And as far as I know, it's not limited to the size of the company.
Oh, interesting. So that's coming straight out of the WIOA, correct?
Yeah. Well, okay. It's actually existed before WIOA, but I think it's part of that continued legislation.
Okay, what is WIOA?
I don't know.
Okay.
Workforce Innovation. Oh,
yes.
Sorry.
Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. Obama put that into place in 2014 and amended in 2016, right before he left office. It's basically a training. It's a job set skill training act. And I didn't know they were partnered with the tax, so that's good to know. Thank you, Deborah.
And getting back to what you were saying, Joanne, we are going to take a break. I just wanted to say that, you know, raising awareness and educating the public, and I want to bring up again the book that the author we had on last week, Dr. Gail Saltz, because the reason she calls it The Power of Different is because instead of seeing these as disabilities and mental illness, that if we see it as different instead of as an affliction, of course, depending on the severity. Of course. We're speaking about education and job training for individuals with autism spectrum disorder with Joanne Lara, Dr. Jennifer DeRocher, and Deborah Chin. We'll be right back.
Minutes past 1 o'clock. It's today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. We're talking about ASD, Autism Spectrum Disorder, and also education and jobs for such individuals. If you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, you're certainly welcome. That number, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Also email, that might be quicker, radio@WLRN.org.
And just to reintroduce our guests, we're speaking with Dr. Jennifer Stella DeRocher. She's Clinical Director of the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities and Professor of Psychology at University of Miami. Also, Deborah Chin is the manager of the Daniel Jordan Foundation Transition and Adult Programs in the University of Miami Nova Southeastern University Card Branch Office. And Joanne Lara is a special education expert and advocate. She's the executive director of Autism Works Now. I want to ask you, Deborah, about the EARN, another acronym for Employment for Adults with Autism Resource Network. Is that part of the CARD program?
Yes, that's an initiative that we started a couple years ago to really put a focus on employment because, as Joanne mentioned, we just really saw the need with so many of the families that we met with. Their biggest concern was employment. And so we wanted to look at how we could systematically provide assistance to employers, to our constituents, and support the community in developing their capacity to be able to employ people with autism.
Are there such a thing as job coaches? Is there anybody that goes out to the job with somebody who's been, once they've landed a job? Dr. DeRocher?
Yeah, so the vocational rehabilitation is a national agency that operates in Florida, and they do have the capacity to place a job coach with somebody who gets a job for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, this is Deborah's area, and we work very closely in the programs that we do with all of the agencies in the community, voc rehab, individual job coaches, and the employers. To help facilitate successful employment. Deb might be able to answer it a little bit.
No, I think you said it perfectly, yes. VR, vocational rehabilitation, is a major source of job coaches for most people.
Okay.
Yes.
Bonnie, I wanted to speak about Autism Works Now, too.
Yes, I want you to. I was going to ask you that. Please do. Go ahead.
All right. So what our program is focusing on, which is where there is a great need as well, is in the pre-employment skills. So we talked earlier about, and I'd like to continue that dialogue, about individuals, the social piece is impeding on even getting that interview.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not even getting close to the final getting of the job. So what we're focusing on, Autism Works Now, is pre-employment skills to job training. It's an 8-month, once a week, 2-hour curriculum and assessment driven program. We're going into our third year in the fall, and we have a book, Teaching Pre-Employment Skills 14 to 17-Year-Olds, the Autism Works Now Method. It addresses how to be on the job, how to be with your coworkers, how do you talk around the water cooler, how about those Dodgers, that kind of banter that our individuals are not able to do, but that's how you keep your job. That's that social piece where people like you and you're embraced by your other coworkers. That's the piece we fall down hard on, even if we are Asperger's and the very high-functioning individuals with autism. Mm-hmm. So it's the piece that needs to be taught, in my opinion, in the school system. Mm-hmm. And we're getting some transition programs that are teaching that, but they're waiting till they're 18 or 22. This is too late to begin to speak about a job. We need to start talking about jobs when these individuals are 5 years old, mm-hmm. when they're little guys, just like we do with our other kids.
Right. Our number again is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. Our email is radio@wlrn.org. We're talking about education and job training and pre-employment training for individuals with autism spectrum disorder.
And we'll take a telephone call or two. First up, it's Davia in Cooper City. Is that correct?
Hi, it's Davia.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call, and the program is fantastic. It's so important to have a dialogue about these issues. I wanted to call in as a parent of a 26-year-old my son was educated in the school system in Broward County and fortunately was able to go to college. But after that, he bounced around from job to job. He could sort of get the job but not really keep the job, a lot of which was because of the lack of social skills that you discussed. But through serendipity, we found out about a program run by Ernst & Young, which chose individuals on the high-functioning autism spectrum and Asperger's and brought them along very, very, very slowly along with an on-site job coach to where they're able to perform assistant-type functions in this accounting firm. He lives in Philadelphia now.
Wow.
And I just wanted to give a shout-out to the company for, he's been employed there for about a year, and for starting this program and sticking with it. And to my understanding, they're expanding it to other cities. And I think it would be awesome if we could get something like this going in Florida.
Absolutely.
That's yeah, amazing. That's great. That's great information, Davia. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, good for him and good for you. And good for Ernst & Young.
Yes. Exactly.
Absolutely. You know, also Northwestern Mutual and there's another one of the insurance companies doing the same thing. We're finding this a lot in the bigger company organizations across the country, because you know what? They're seeing that our individuals are doing great jobs and they're employable and they do a fantastic job at the skill set, the splintered skill set that they're hired for.
And I also think an important piece of it is that in that case, the states of New Jersey and Pennsylvania have funded the job coach, so it makes it a great public-private partnership.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling, Davia.
Thank you.
Okay.
Again, our number, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Email, that's radio@wlrn.org. Again, we do have some lines open at 1-800-743-9576. Joanne, Laura, we're talking about adolescents, teens, and young adults, but where do parents fit in here?
Well, we need to educate the parents, and I think, I was on Hillary Clinton's Disability Employment Task Force team for 10 months, and during that time I was honored to be able to meet a number of individuals who really drove this train, if you will, since the early 90s, some having gotten awards from Bill Clinton for employment and disabilities, and another individual who co-wrote, Tony Coelho. I'd love to give a shout out to him, Tony Coelho, who was a co-author of Americans with Disabilities Act. What we're seeing is that we have to begin to open the dialogue with the parents early on. They have to believe that there isn't a job for their child because they're reluctant to talk about jobs if they haven't seen them. And up until this point, they haven't seen jobs for their kids. So when you have a, here's a scenario, parents at a party, someone comes, that daughter of yours so bright. Yeah, she's going to go to Harvard Law School. Oh, and what about your little guy over here? Oh, he likes Thomas the Train. So instead of, he likes Thomas the Train, he's five, he has autism, he's obsessing with Thomas the Train, we can continue that dialogue with, he might work at a train station someday. So that we begin to give that child, because let's face it, the mother is the biggest model, the mother and the father, that he has a place in the community. Right now, the dialogue ends right there. He's mm-hmm. looking up at the parent like, what is she going to say? Oh, nothing about me. There's no future for me. So we have to begin to educate the parents, and that means for them to understand what the ITP process is, the Individualized Transition Plan, which is part of, and now in more acronyms, part of the IEP process, the Individuals Education Plan, but it's also umbrellaed under IDEA. Individuals Transition Plan supposed to be at either 14 or 16 years of age when the IEP team comes together. We should be looking at what is the community going to look like setting for this child? What is the job going to look like for this child? And what is the residential going to look like for this child? It covers three domains. It's not happening. We're not addressing it. We should be assessing it. IDEA said we should be assessing it. In 1997, the tool, the assessment tool, was supposed to be used. So in other words, an assessment tool, what is this individual good at?
Right.
What is he? Where do his strengths lie
well,
in the employment?
And evidently there is testing where you can find out where your strength is in spite of mm-hmm. whatever disability you may have. Dr. DeRocher,
yes.
We wanted to add something.
Yeah, so I mean, I think I agree with Joanne in that we need to start working with the parents and we need to start working with them early. And we need to, you know, instill hope in parents as to the fact that their child will be capable of doing something meaningful in their
right.
life. What that will be and what that will look like is going to vary from every individual. Some, you know, will be able to go on to regular workforce employment. Others will be doing more volunteer experience. Some will be, you know, doing a very job
customized
job.
Yeah.
But we start early with instilling hope, and we let parents know what to expect at every step along the way. I think parents focus so much on the early childhood years
right.
that they are reluctant to look at the future because it's scary, and then they're ill-prepared when we get there.
Exactly.
And that's one of the things that our center, I think, is one of our strengths, is that we work with families from their very first diagnosis, when they first walk in the doors at 18 months, and we follow them all the way through adulthood.
So when, just as a practical matter, if somebody's listening and they have a child who they suspect is or have been told is on the autism spectrum disorder or has an autism spectrum disorder, how do they get to you?
They get to us by our website is probably the easiest, so www.umcard.org or 1-800-9-AUTISM. We're the first choice on there. There are 7 card centers. We're the first option. And they can come in no matter at what age the child gets a diagnosis, whether it's 2, whether it's 10, whether it's 15, whether it's 40.
Okay.
When they get diagnosed, call us.
All right. And just that information again is umcard.
umcard.org.
And the number is 1-800-9-AUTISM. Okay,
that's correct.
We're going to take a short break. We're speaking about education and job training for individuals with autism spectrum disorder. And our last break, we'll come back and take your calls, so be patient. Stay with us.
And we're back. It's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Also, Joanne Lara, Deborah Chin, and Dr. Jennifer DeRocher. Our topic today is autism and related disabilities. And we go to a caller. We've got quite a few on the air. We'll try and get to them quickly and as many as possible. Christian in Parkland. Hi. Christian, you're up.
Christian?
In Parkland.
Are you there?
Okay. We'll move along then to Anna in Hollywood. Hello there.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call and thank you for the program. I'm a mom of a 21-year-old young adult who's really focused on his degree and his education, and he's attained his AA and is now in a certification program. But we're starting to worry about what life's going to be like with regards to life skills, social skills, and especially attaining a job. I did write down the umcard.org and the phone number that you provided. I was wondering if that was my first step, because I feel like we've, much like you've said on the program, waited too long or too late to really seek treatment with regards to life skills and training for jobs.
Deborah, if you want to take this.
Yes, I think we're a great first step. We won't be your only step, but through the generosity of funders like the Daniel Jordan Fiddle Foundation and the Children's Trust, we're able to provide free services. And part of that is being able to work directly with families on an individualized basis to assess their needs and look at the right options, the right kinds of resources and interventions that your son might need in order to be successful in employment in the future.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I'm so happy. I wanted to ask you that. So this is free of charge?
Yes.
That's amazing. So
yes.
The entire program and all
right.
the various programs
yes.
that you have?
Every single thing that our CART Center offers is free because of all of our generous funders, not just the state, Children's Trust, Daniel Jordan Fiddle Foundation, very many other funders.
Okay.
We are able to provide all of those kind of support services. We're not doing direct intervention, but every support that we offer is free, from parent support groups to job clubs for adults seeking employment, to
social opportunities for adults.
Yeah, social opportunity groups, social skills groups.
Mm-hmm. And although you're in California, Joanne Lara, would you talk about how people can get the name of that book again?
Yes, absolutely. Teaching Pre-Employment Skills to 14 to 17-year-olds, Autism Works Now Method. They can pre-order it on autismworksnow.org, which is our website. You can also see about our program, and you'll get clips of the kids. And we do a field trip every month, which is part of the program, where we go into the employers, and we have questions for them, and we sit around a round table, and we do mock interviews. You know, we're doing all that pre-employment. I think it was Deborah who talked about getting the job. You got to get the job first, and our individuals don't do well in that interview process. So we have to teach the skills to call and get an interview, and everything is online now. You first have to apply online.
Right.
And back to our callers. Next up, it's Maggie in Boca Raton. Maggie, you're up.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My daughter is 21. She's at the Wilkes Honors College up in FAU. They're a wonderful program, and she's very interested in calculus and that sort of thing. She's very high functioning. I'm concerned. Are there companies that, like high tech companies, that you have lined up or might have know about that can, we might be able to connect to provide employment for kids such as this?
Deborah?
We've been talking about some of those tech companies. There's other companies like SAP, even Google. So there are companies, and they're more being added every day. I mean, even Freddie Mac, new industries that are really starting to see the strengths of people with autism. But I also want to take a moment to just recognize that I believe that everyone with autism has some work skills, work abilities. And so in addition to looking at those high-paying tech jobs, which is sort of a new innovative path for people with autism, and I'm really glad it's getting attention, I want to remember some of the other paths. So places like Publix, places like Walgreens that are really doing their part to hire entry-level workers who might not have those skills but bring something fantastic to the workplace.
And I want to read this. This is from Julia, that she's completing her master's degree in occupational therapy, and this is the field she wants to focus on. She knows small candle store in Coral Springs called Sensibility.
Sensibility,
oh,
yes.
Yeah. We know them.
That only employs teens with ASD. The link is attached below. The lady does an amazing job and could definitely benefit from vocational training services.
And okay, Maggie, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Maggie.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And next up, we have Jim in Cooper City. Jim, hello.
Hey, how are you? Enjoying your show. I just wanted to give a shout out to Dr. Chin, because I am the board chair at the David Posnack Jewish Community Center in Davie, and we have had an award-winning camp for kids with special needs for years, and some of the kids aged out, and the parents came to us, and with the help of the whole community, including Dr. Chin, who came up and did a lot of the training for our staff, we instituted a program called Gibberim U, which provides for a year-round program as diverse as exceptional theater, yoga, fitness, and we're also integrating life skills and things like that. So it just got off the ground in February. We were overwhelmed with the number of applicants, and as they said in Jaws, we need a bigger boat. But it's a great program, and we're very proud of it, and we're glad to help. And we again wanted to thank Dr. Chin and all her staff for helping our staff get up to speed on this, because it's a diverse population. It's not just autistic. It's all sorts of special needs, and it's a great program. So I wanted to put that out there for everybody, and especially people in South Florida, that they could call the David Posnack JCC and get more information on that.
Okay, Jim. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we move along to Alex, also in Boca. Alex, hi.
Yes, hi. My name is Alex here in Boca, and I'm on the board of the HAB Center, and we serve about 225 adults with disabilities. So I wanted to let the community know that the, you know, there are organizations out there. HAB Center has been around since 1978. We have manufacturing facilities where we teach, you know, adults with disabilities sophisticated work, such as electrical mechanical assembly. Hmm. We also have a nursery. And then while they're able to work there, we also offer the social services. We have a program called PEAR, which is Programs, Education, Art, and Recreation. And it's phenomenal. If you've never been up to the facility, we have adults with disabilities, mental and physical, that come from Dade to Palm Beach. And it's just an amazing facility. We're doing amazing things there. But, you know, hope everybody can check out. It's
okay.
HAB Center.
How do you spell that?
Yeah, that's H-A-B.
Okay.
Center.org.
Okay, Alex, thank you very much for the information.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Okay, we're kind of short on time, but we'll move to Christian in Parkland. Hi, quickly.
Hello, this is Christian Lachlan, and I live in Parkland, and I'm one of the Special Olympics athletes for Broward County. I won many gold medals, and now I work in Brooklyn Water Bagels in West Boca and Parkland.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, that's great.
Awesome.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Just because you have autism, it doesn't mean that it's a disability. It's like an advantage, because we get to see the world so much different.
Huh.
And Christian,
we gain a lot more strength. We get to see nature like other people don't see it. I get to pick up bees with my own hands. I never get stung. I pick up fire ants. I pick up animals. People would think that they will hurt you. And I got to actually kiss bees and all the stuff on the wings.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. It all depends how much of your heart you give to nature and to the people, because you have to see people as part of your family first. That's one of the ways I see it. And, yeah, like, it doesn't matter where you are or where you're from. Like, you have to treat people as your family.
Okay, Christian, we really appreciate that perspective. It's some interesting things to contemplate.
Yeah, really beautiful.
Thank you very much for sharing them.
I have to give you a link that I want you guys to check out. It's really amazing. There's two. It's this one is on YouTube. My username is KRILOXTA3000. And the other website is www.icla.org.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, it's been a very interesting hour.
It has. We've been speaking with Dr. Jennifer Stella DeRocher. She's a clinical director of the Center for Autism and Related Disabilities and professor of psychology, University of Miami. She's worked with individuals with autism and their families for 25 years. Deborah Chin is the manager of the Daniel Jordan
Fiddle Foundation.
Fiddle Foundation. I forgot that.
Transition
and Adult Programs. And the University of Miami Nova Southeastern University Card Branch Office. Joanne Lara is a special education expert and advocate. She's the executive director of Autism Works Now. We will have links to umcard.org and 1-800-9-AUTISM on our website. And we thank all of you for the information and for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
It was great to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that wraps up today's edition. It was produced by Polly Landis. Technical direction from online content producer Jason Zabka. Richard Ives is lead producer. Some of your friends or relatives may be interested in hearing this program. It's easy to download free audio archives from our website. That's WLRN.org. And follow the radio and topical currents links there. Also, more information at the Topical Currents Facebook page, and you can hear the program via the iTunes podcast. Tomorrow, it's our At Your Service Condo and HOA Association program with attorney, blogger, and columnist Donna Berger. We'll get the lowdown on what to make of the latest legislative regulation changes concerning HOAs and condo associations. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.